Check, check. Can you check your mic?
Chickity check.
Chickity check, check, check. Do you miss the music?
I check one, two.
Do you miss U.S. music, pop music?
No. I mean, I don't know. It's like I've heard enough music and I can hear it in my head forever. So.
Do you listen to Czech music, Czech pop? Or like, what do you listen to?
I've never really been into pop. I listen to a lot of podcasts these days.
That's so adult and boring.
It's like, look, you got to get the word of God in where you can.
Amen. Amen. I hear you. I hear you.
And then the occasional random podcast about economics for some reason. I listen to a lot of podcasts about economics. I don't know why, but it's so interesting.
Yeah.
That's why. Okay. I do know why.
I see. I see. So how's it been back in America? When was the last time you were in the States?
Last time I was in the States was for Julia's wedding, which was like end of January 2019, beginning of February.
Okay, so right before COVID. Oh, no.
No, that was a whole year before COVID.
Yeah, yeah. What was it like, COVID?
COVID in the Czech Republic. Well, I'd say it's probably better than it was here in a lot of ways. Because people weren't as polarized. There were some people, but it was few and far between. At least our church experience was that like there weren't a lot of people who were very militant one way or the other. I would say most of the people individually leaned kind of towards being more lax.
Oh, interesting.
But
okay.
If there were people who leaned towards being more strict, nobody hassled them about it.
Mm.
Or the other way around. So I think the elders were very wise in how they kind of made the decision and then disseminated the information to the church. One day, like while things were going on, they went and discussed, like as every new step was kind of being implemented. So first, like it was like complete lockdown. We couldn't go to church at all. So it was only like the pastor and then the worship team and then me. Whoa, that was loud. Once we were able to start coming in, that's when they had to make the decision about what we were going to do about masks or what our requirements were going to be. And so when they talked to the church, they didn't just say, this is what we're going to do, period. So do it.
Yeah.
But it was more like they talked us through how they made the decision, the questions that they asked, were number one, like, is what the government asking us to do, is it sin? No. There's nowhere in the Bible that says it's sin to wear a mask. But the second question is it done with any kind of malicious intent? Are they trying to persecute us? Are they holding us to a standard different from other organizations of the same size? No, if anything, the Czech government was much looser with churches and made exceptions for us to be able to meet. So we were very lucky in that regard. And then the third question is it what the government is asking us to do? Like, does it hurt us in any way? No, it's annoying. Nobody likes wearing a mask, I don't think. But for that reason,
the
they decided we're going to comply.
I don't want to shave or anything like that. I love wearing the mask and stuff. But.
It's like you got all these zits and stuff and no one can
exactly,
see it.
Exactly, exactly. But if someone tells me that I need to wear a mask, that's another deal.
Exactly. So it went like that. And then there were some people who were more sensitive. I can only think of two people who left our church because they kind of didn't agree with the fact that we were masking at all. But honestly, there were other issues going on and it was kind of just a convenient excuse to leave anyway. So, and then one of the things they encouraged us to do is if somebody has a different conviction from you, don't make it a thing. Like, that's just their conviction. They have the freedom to practice what they believe, the same as you have the freedom to practice what you believe. And so we had Sundays where like nobody was wearing a mask and like two people were wearing it, but nobody went up to that person and was like, why are you wearing a mask?
Mm.
So it was really good. And then there were Sundays where we were all wearing a mask because we'd been told to do it. And one person came in and they like weren't wearing one. Nobody said anything.
Yeah.
So like the greatest gift they gave to us was to remind us not to make it a thing.
Yeah, for sure.
So like because of that, I think our church did relatively well during COVID. And I was very thankful for their leadership in that.
That's so cool.
It was really cool.
So we're going to bounce around because I like bouncing around.
Okay.
I don't like to keep one linear thought. So Gina Lim, you're Korean. You're in the Czech Republic.
There's a good
amount of people, new people, maybe people who don't know you as much. But we do have recordings that you've done in the past in regards to FAQs and things like that people can listen to. But on a quick little summary, so it's like, who's Gina? Why is she in Czech Republic? It's like, well, yeah. What would be your like elevator pitch?
Elevator pitch on who's Gina Lim?
Yep.
I am a Christian.
Amen. Amen.
And I've been a believer since my teens. Not exactly sure when. I was raised in the church, but not a Christian that entire time.
Teens are like in middle school, high school, late high school, college?
Well, I started going to church when I was about 8 years old. But at that time, our family was more going to church because of the cultural aspect of it, like to have contact with other Koreans. And so that was confused a lot in my younger years. Mm. But after having been forced to go to church for many years, I was then forced into a small group Bible study that I didn't want to be a part of, but felt like I had to, or else I would be so hardcore judged. But God really used that to show me. I think, first of all, we were going through this little booklet called Lessons on Assurance put out by Navigators. And it was the first time.
How old were you at this time?
I was probably 14, I think, okay, when we started.
Okay.
And then through that little booklet, it was about lessons. How do you know if you're a believer? And I think it was the first time I realized that it's possible to know 100% that you are a Christian. Because even though, like, they ostensibly kind of taught the Bible in Sunday school class, and maybe there were a couple lessons where they were like taught, where it was taught well, but most of my remembrance of what I was taught was like, it was like, Jesus died on the cross for your sins. Mm. So get good grades and listen to your parents. And so I was like, I don't understand what those two things have to do with each other.
Right.
But
play the piano. Yeah, play the violin.
Exactly. And I was like, I vaguely listen to my parents and I get pretty good grades, so I must be a Christian. I must be fine.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, but all the while in my heart is, like, boiling with rage at my parents and my brother and sister and, like, you know, so discontent, angry at God for not making me pretty and, like, all these other things and for making me Korean in a school full of white people.
Because you grew up in Long Beach.
Yeah, and black people, too. But, like, you didn't want to, like, in that neighborhood where I knew the black people from, you didn't want to be one of them. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah.
They'd be doing illegal things.
Yes.
Yes, okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
And also, they'd be Poe. They'd be Poe. We didn't want to be Poe. But we were. Anyway, so from there, God just opened up scripture to me. And instead of being a good kid and like wanting to obey because I didn't want to get in trouble or because like I didn't want my mom to be mad at me, I started believing because like I actually cared about what God thought and like wanted to please him. So this is like gradual transformation that I myself didn't understand, like that it was different. But suddenly I wanted to go to church, whereas I always had to be dragged there before. And like suddenly I cared about like reading the Bible during the week.
And this is around 14.
And this is around 14, 15, between 14 and say six. By the time I was 16, I'm pretty sure I was a believer.
Wow. Okay.
So that's kind of the gradual transformation of how I became who I am now.
Yeah. But then what brought you to the Czech Republic? Because you've been there now for...
I've been there for 8 years now.
Yeah, almost a decade. I want to say almost a decade.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
On the, like, closer to the 10. If you had to round, you'd round up to 10
absolutely.
Now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I always had wanted, ever since I became a believer, I wanted to serve overseas. You hear all these, you know, we would read, you know, about Elizabeth Elliot and all these other people, and it seemed so, like, glamorous or, like, so interesting. And, and then, like, in the Korean church, they really revere missionaries and people in ministry. So I was like, I want to be revered. Just to be frank, that was kind of what put me on that track.
Yes.
But then like, after I became an actual believer, it again, like another one of the things that transformed is I no longer wanted to do it so that people would like honor me or like think I was cool, but really because I did want to serve the Lord and like serve the God and like serve the gospel cause. But I never really knew where. And I like, and then somewhere early on in that process of me thinking through those things, I had heard a sermon where, and then I also kind of thought, like, I'm such a loser and, like, so lame. Like, no one's going to let me be a missionary. Who's going to want me, right? And kind of despaired. At that time, there was a culture in our church, at the church I was going to, where, like, it was a woman, not only a gentle and quiet spirit, but literally quiet. And that's so, if you've spent more than 5 minutes with me, you know that's not me. So I was like, I can never be godly. Oh, well, guess I'll never be a missionary. But then I heard a sermon that, which I don't necessarily agree with this now, but it helped me at that point to hope. But they said, everyone should want to be a missionary. What you should find out is if you're called to stay. So I was like, oh, so it's possible for me to go. So I will pray in that direction. And God was very, I wouldn't agree with that now.
Yeah.
That, I'd say like, it's a calling and it's not just like, ooh, I'm willing to go, so we'll send whoever. But yeah, so the question then was like, where? So in order to kind of find out where, I just went on every single short-term missions trip I could possibly go to, which was admittedly limited because I worked a corporate American job. And so I only got 2 weeks of vacations a year. And at that time, we didn't have that many trips that would let you go for only 2 weeks. We had, I think we had Mexico, but I'd been to Mexico before. And so I wanted to try something different. And it was like too close. I kind of didn't want to be close enough to have to visit my parents regularly. So like I did a trip to Kazakhstan and I thought to myself, I could do this. I did a trip to like a Navajo reservation in Arizona and I thought I could do this. But it was always like, I would be willing if God sent me. But then in 2007, we had an economic crisis. I lost my job. And I finally had enough time to go on the Czech trip, which was 3 weeks at the time.
Yeah.
So I went. And for the first time, almost from the second I got off the plane, I was like, I want to be here, though. So it was like, instead of like, I could be here, it was like, this is where I think I want to be.
Was there certain things that gravitated you towards that, in that sense? Was it the people, the area, the language?
I think it was like a combination of a whole bunch of different things. Like, I certainly didn't hate being there. It was like nice, but I think it was, I think English camp played a huge role because the work that we were doing there was very conversational and I can't stop talking. So it was perfect for me. And you know, and like not just talking, but also engaging and interacting with people. So it appealed to me that there was a possibility of that there and we'd be teaching English. And I'm like such a grammar geek. So that appealed to me as well. But even just kind of like it, I think the thing that really broke my heart for that land was that they'd just come out of communism and they'd lived through something like so difficult. And now they were like coming out and becoming a first world country again. And they had no idea of their need. They couldn't see it at all. Just because they have like McDonald's, they think they have everything they need now. And that
McDonald's, Starbucks,
can you imagine
internet.
That you have McDonald's and you're like, we're living the life? My Lord. So that was one thing that drew me is that they had no clue. Like they had everything that they wanted.
Yeah.
And it was all going to burn.
Yeah.
And only, like, we knew that, you know, only I knew that. Yeah. So that was another thing that drew me to that country.
Wow. That's really cool.
So, yeah.
You talked about, this is probably in the growth process, which I want to touch on a little bit. You're saying, like, maybe you're just saying this for the saying it, but, like, you're saying, like, you thought you were lame or certain things along those lines. Like, how'd you process that? Obviously, it's just fighting through those internal things.
Yeah, I think the two things that help me with that is, number one, the realization that everyone's lame.
Yeah.
That really helps. So it's like, you know, if it's a competition, it's a competition for who's the lamest. So, yeah. Like, it's nice to know that you're in a relatively similar boat to everybody else.
Yeah.
And then the second thing is that, like, you grow in faith to see that God uses lame people. You read the Bible, and you're like, Jonah was lame. And God still used him to save all of Assyria, pretty much. Like, that's a pretty crazy story. So kind of seeing how, like, it doesn't matter that I'm lame when God is so great.
Yeah.
So, and then hopefully it's like an encouragement to other people to see, like, whoa, she's so lame. It's like, I too can aspire to be a missionary.
Well, the glory or the pinpoint, the spotlight isn't on you anymore.
Yeah.
It's on God.
Well, it shouldn't
be. Yeah, right. God can use all types of people for his glory to accomplish his missions, right?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, totally. Not to be ashamed or embarrassed by that or like our quirkiness or awkwardness or anything.
Not to let it discourage you. Because I think what I really struggled with, because like I said, like the culture at the time was trying to encourage people towards like literal quietness. Like don't like I would often be told I laugh too loud. I'm not even kidding. And it'd be like a rebuke. And I was like, if that's the worst thing about me.
One more time, we're going to need to kick you out of the church.
Right.
Yeah, oh my goodness.
Okay. I mean, you know, it was frustrating for me. But, like, because I felt like it was impossible for me to be godly. But I think after coming to terms with the fact that, like, God can use anybody, it helped me even get out. Even it changed my picture. Like, once I had a more biblical picture of what godliness looks like, and it's not about volume. Although, you know, it was distracting. I laughed a lot louder back then, which I know that's hard to believe.
I think there's a recording of that somewhere
I'm sure,
that we can play.
Well, here's the thing. If you go back to old sermon recordings.
Oh, hey.
If you go back to old sermon
Instead
recordings.
Instead of the hallelujah,
like,
amen, pastor. It's just like.
Oh, no. It's just Gina cracking up in the front row. Or sneezing really loudly. I'm also a very loud sneezer. If you just want to hear like one big like, that's me.
Bless
from
you.
These like
Sit
old like sermons from like early 2000s. That's me.
So funny.
So, you know, but I think it helped me to kind of recalibrate my view of what godliness looked like and what the aim of godliness was. It wasn't to fit in with a culture. It wasn't to like not be noticed like in the name of like giving more glory to Christ, but it's like being noticed for the right things. For the love of Christ, for shining that example, for like for loving people with the love of Christ, and yeah, if you laugh loud, it doesn't matter that much.
Yeah, yeah.
So these things are helpful.
So you've been in the Czech Republic for almost 10 years now. So what are things that you've learned in regards to cultural differences that make it challenging to become a Czech person? Are you a Czech Republic citizen now?
No, no. I still have long-term residence, which is I have to renew every 2 years, and it's a super annoying process. Wow. Poor Huey, he feels my pain because he often has to like sign documents and get them notarized and like try to ship them over
to
me.
Can you just DocuSign them?
No, they have to be, and like the Czech government, they're like old school. They're huge believers in like physical signatures and like stamps. They love stamps, like official stamps with like the name of the company on it and like the
like,
signature
not like a
of the
stamp or something
not
like that.
Not a Sanrio stamp, unless your company is Sanrio. But then like they want the signature in like a different colored ink so you can tell it wasn't just photocopied. And but anyway, they're really into like that kind of stuff.
Got it.
But in terms of Czech culture, it was interesting when I went there. I thought that I would relate to the Czech people on the basis of the fact that they're white and I grew up in America.
Yeah.
So that must be a connection.
Yeah.
In the end, it's more that I grew up Korean and like poor and they grew up like in communism. And like we relate on the basis of having grown up poor. So like they, a lot
interesting.
And even like in the Czech Republic, they take off their shoes when they go in the house. I can tell you what, like, how that encouraged my heart to see that the first time I visited a Czech, and I was like, oh, y'all clean.
Oh my goodness. That's so funny.
So it was surprising how, like, I never thought that being Korean would be one of the things that prepared me for ministry in Europe. Right? I think in terms of, like, relating to the Czech people, it's not, because ultimately people are people everywhere, right?
But then some people say the Czech people are a little more hard, a little more closed off, harder to get to know, or those
this
type
is,
of things.
This is actually true. So one of the challenges, I think like when you have a reason to get to know someone, like I'm their teacher because I teach English.
Yeah, okay.
So if they're my student, instant connection, like they have to talk to me. Mm. And so it's like, as I often say that like teaching private lessons is like half grammar and half therapy. Because
therapy
they share all of their problems with you. Because you're talking about like their lives. And so they tell you everything, and sometimes you're like, stop, please stop.
Filter.
So, but if it's like, for example, your neighbors, it has taken, like, it took 3 years before, like, my first neighbor said hi to me in the hallway.
Uh-huh.
Just, like, returned to my dobrý den, which means, like, good day.
You would say out loud. And then
they would kind of just look at me, or I'd see them, like, if we were in the hallway in the flat, then they would kind of mumble their greeting and walk on, because it was obvious that I lived there. But I sometimes would see them on the street, and then they would not return my greeting, and I'm not sure if it's because they didn't know I was that Asian that lives in their building. So, because they cannot tell the difference between us.
Are there a lot of Asians in the first place?
There are a lot of Vietnamese people.
Oh, interesting. I didn't know that.
So, this is a story, is that one day I opened my mailbox and there was a letter there for a Vietnamese person.
Okay.
Like, it was a clearly Vietnamese name to me as a Korean. It clearly wasn't Korean.
Was like,
and
no
I was
win.
Like, what is this doing in my mailbox?
Okay.
So I was like, well, maybe it was just an accident. And I thought, like, who could it be for? There are no other Vietnamese people living in the building. I was like, maybe it's for the little liquor store that's at the back of the building. Mm. So I walked it around and I asked the guy, is this yours? And he was like, oh, yeah, that's for me. So I was like, okay, honest mistake, right? Well, after I delivered it, for like the next month, I was getting letters every week for that guy. So then I put a little...
Was it for your address, though?
Because the thing is, like, they don't have apartment numbers. Or, like, when you deliver something to someone, you don't put the apartment number on there. You just put the building address. And then the mailman comes and all of the mailboxes are labeled and they'll stick it in the slot with your name on it. His name is not on any of those slots because he doesn't live there. He's in the little store that's at the back of the building.
Mm-hmm.
So then I put a sign up on my mailbox that said, this man does not live here.
Yeah.
And it gave them directions, like, how to get there. Like, it's around the corner behind the building. But they still kept leaving it in my mailbox. So finally, I took it to the back to the post office. Like, can you please tell whoever's doing the mail, like in our neighborhood, that this guy lives, like, doesn't live here? He's in the. And so finally, it stopped. But it was like 6 months of me delivering this guy's mail. It was wild. But yeah. So it took 3 years for them to start saying hi to me and like kind of recognizing which one I was.
Uh-huh.
But then it took, like, I've been living there 8 years now. It took the pandemic for people to kind of start warming up to me. Because during the pandemic, nobody could leave. We were all trapped in that building.
Yeah.
And they were all just trapped at home. And it occurred to me one day that it might be nice. Like, they're all trapped there. They have nowhere to go. I could, like, bake stuff And like, so I baked a whole bunch of stuff with a tract and then left it on their doormats. This is my like MO now, is that like during like major holidays, like Easter and Christmas, I'll bake up a bunch of stuff, put it, box it all up with a tract or some kind of like flyer or something, and then go out like at 11 o'clock at night, take the elevator to the top floor and then just deliver all the way down and then end up at my own flat and go inside.
Yeah.
And so like nobody else does this. It's not, Czechs do not get to know their neighbors in an apartment building. Like if you're living in, because like if you live in a house and you're in like a suburb, then you kind of have to talk over the fence. And like you're out there doing yard work, he's out there doing. But for us, like you're not hanging out in the hallway.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So you kind of don't have a reason to. And then they don't do the thing where you go and like bring cookies to the new neighbor. That's not a thing here. So the fact that I did that, a lot of people really appreciated it. It was like the first time in all of this time that I felt that anyone besides like the people that they were living with knew that they even existed. So it was nice for them. A lot of people started leaving gifts back. Like they would kind of, it was like some of the stuff was really weird, but
that could be then, a podcast another time.
And then a lot of the things contain nuts, which I'm allergic to. So I kind of ended up having to either take it to church or even just throw it away. But but that helped a lot with, I think, building bridges. And there's one family that lives like in the, on the same side of the building as me, and like they're basically two apartments right above me, and they have two little boys. And then last year, after I left the Easter packages, they came downstairs and knocked on my door, and they asked me if they could come and hodovat. What that is, it's kind of like Christmas caroling, but for Easter. So they come to your door, usually Monday. We have Easter Monday. They don't do Easter Sunday because they're like not Christians anymore, but they do Easter Monday, where
is
in the morning.
Is that the same thing? Or what does that mean? Easter
no,
Monday.
But they just get Monday off after Easter.
Oh, okay.
And that's the day that they do all of their traditional things, which is when they go around to the neighbor. If you live in a house or like in a neighborhood, you go around to all the houses in the neighborhood and you sing a little song or like do a little rhyme. And it's usually the boys, or it's always the boys who do it. They have these braided willow whips that have, they're tied with ribbons. And the tradition is that like if you whip a woman with that whip, not hard, but you just kind of like playfully hit her with it, then the youth and the beauty of the willow transfers to the woman so that she will be young and fresh for another year. So they like come, and then you're supposed to give them like candy, like chocolates and eggs and things. So they came to my door and I was very excited that they were engaging with me. So I was like, yes, you can come. And then they left and I realized I have no idea what they're expecting from me. Like, I don't know what to buy them. I've never done this. And like, I never did it as a child myself. So I went to the store, which was thankfully like there was one. It was Easter Sunday when they came. Okay. Or no. I think it was Saturday. I did it Saturday because I wanted to invite them to church on Sunday. Unfortunately, there's one store that was still open. I had like 1 hour and I basically like cleared the shelves of like all the chocolate that they had.
Aww.
Like put it in bags and gave it to the boys when they came the next day. And then they came again this year. And now like we say hi to each other when we pass each other and like, even on the street. But on this trip, when I had to come here, I, for some reason during COVID, I guess, like I suddenly started to grow plants. Like because I'm like Korean, right? So I'm super cheap and it feels like such a waste to me to like buy a basil. So they don't sell basil in like a plastic like container already cut up. They sell it in a little pot. Where like the roots are still attached, so it doesn't. So you can kind of, but you can continue to grow in it if you like play your cards right.
Yeah.
So I started growing all these like basils and stuff, and then like last year I did it last year, but then I went to like we had a church retreat, and during the church retreat we were gone for like 8 days and everything died.
Oh.
So I was like meh. And then so when I was preparing to come to this trip, I was like, oh, it feels like such a shame to let all of these things die. Again, just a waste. Not necessarily because I'm attached to these plants, but because it's such a waste of money, like 30 cents that it cost me.
Right.
But then it occurred to me, I should ask those boys.
Yeah.
Because they live in the apartment. I can just leave them a key. So I asked them if they would do it. I've paid them handsomely. They're getting like 10 bucks each to come in and water a bunch of plants. But you know, it's mostly the sweet and the, and I left them like a giant bar of chocolate to split. But they were super excited about it because they've never been like given a job before. And so like their mom was really appreciative because she's like, thank you for like, you know, thinking of them. And then like, so this crazy thing happened too, where like my, I was supposed to get a shuttle service because my flight was at 7 a.m. on Monday.
Oh, wow.
And so I had to be at the airport probably by like 5. So I needed someone to take me at like 4:30. And I don't want, I'm a better friend than that. I'm not going to ask anybody to do that. So I called a shuttle service. Well, they like didn't like, they asked me to confirm the address, but they sent the email on Sunday morning while I was at church. And then we don't have Wi-Fi in the church. And then like, and then the instructions were very confusing. So I thought I would do it when I got back home.
Yeah.
Well, like less than 5 hours or like about 5 hours later, they write me an email saying that my reservation has been canceled because I never responded to them. So I was like, And I was very salty at that point. So I was like, I'm not going to like rent another service. I'm just going to take the bus.
Yeah.
I took the bus and guess who was on the bus going to work? Their mom.
No way.
So like we had to have, it was the first time we had like a full adult conversation.
That early in the morning?
Yeah. So she goes to work really early so that she can come home early. She has like flexible hours at work, so she can come in whenever she wants.
Sure.
And then she can leave like after 8 hours. And so she can come home and spend more time with her boys and pick them up from school and take them to their activities and stuff. So like we had a full like adult conversation for the first time that like any of my neighbors besides that there's every she's like kind of the de facto head of the of like the Czech equivalent of an HOA like homeowners association. So she knows everybody's business. And so like she always stops by and like talks to me and stuff, but for and that I started to get to know her after like year 3. So it took like 5 years before I finally became friends with Hannah, the neighbor from two floors above. This is how long it takes.
To meet people.
To meet people.
Just to even get to know people. Get to know people.
To really get to know them. So like, pray for Hannah and her, I don't know her husband's name yet. I've seen him, but we've never like talked. I'm sure that's coming. I'm probably going to invite them to dinner when I get back. But Hannah, Tomáš, the older son, and Jirka, the younger son.
So tell me, because like, you're talking about like you're having these full-on conversations, talking with people. I mean, that's language acquisition. So like on scale, if you were to have to objectively put on scale 1 to 10, how comfortable do you feel with Czech language?
Well, I don't have to make it that like subjective because we have a framework in Europe of language learning. So there's like A1, which means you're a beginner. A2, which means you're pre-intermediate. B1, which means you're a solid intermediate. B2, upper intermediate. And C1, advanced.
Got it.
And then like C2, like practically a native speaker. I feel like a lot of Americans would not pass that test. So I would put myself at like a solid B1.
Okay.
Where like I can converse, I make a ton of mistakes, but people can generally understand me and I can generally understand them.
Oh, cool. Cool.
So God is good.
So like, yeah. So it's not like you're talking in English. You're talking in
Czech. No.
Because do they speak English?
I don't know. I think some of them do. But most of them feel very awkward speaking to a native speaker unless they're paying me to do it.
Oh, I see.
So like they feel if I can speak Czech, they generally feel more comfortable speaking to me in Czech. Unless they're actually advanced and like or pretty advanced, or unless they're my student.
So do you wear a badge around saying like I'm B1 or I'm C1 or C2? And who judges that?
No. you generally it's judged by your teacher.
Oh. Okay.
So like if you're in a class, like in school, it would be judged by like your teacher.
Okay.
And like if you you can take an exam to get actual certification, which you would probably, if you want to say on your resume that you speak at a certain level, they don't want to hear I can speak intermediately. They want to see I have a B2 certificate.
I see
so
what you're saying.
So they're really into certificates.
Yeah.
And like stamps, like I said.
Wait, so how long do you feel like it took you to get to that point?
It's been 8 years, Will.
It took 8 years to get to the B1 level.
Like,
that's what I'm saying.
To this level, yeah. It took, after maybe the second year, I was able to do tasks like on my own, like to actually serve church.
Go to restaurants, order food and all that stuff.
Yeah, and like kind of...
I'm sure that was the first year.
Like, yeah, year two. Or it was after Julia left, so probably like the beginning of year 3, that when we had English camp, I went and got all the printing done by myself.
Wow.
And I was like very happy that I was finally able to contribute in some way. And then come to find out later that the lady who had to help me was like, everyone told her to help me because like I was a foreigner and they couldn't understand what I was saying. And she actually grew up and she's at our church now.
Oh,
that's
no
a
way.
Wild story if you've got time to hear it. Yeah. But
Possibly.
Let me know.
Yes. I might go back to that. Because one thing that I am curious about, Ukraine and Russia. How's that like? As obviously as a church member, but also as a citizen or as a resident of the Czech Republic, like what's that?
Yeah, I was really sick the week before the war broke out, or it was like the week that the war broke out. So I was up really late at night because I couldn't sleep because I was coughing so much. So I was just like scrolling Instagram, came across a post that was like, yeah, Russia just bombed Ukraine.
Yeah.
I was like, holy smokes, this is it.
Yeah.
We'd been hearing about it for weeks, you know, and nobody was really taking it that seriously. Because like, Putin, you know.
Yeah.
But then it happened. And so at that point, after that, we quickly started getting news that like the bombings were getting worse, that people were dying, that people were fleeing, and they were at that point fleeing to Poland. And we figured it was only a matter of time before they would start fleeing to us. Poland was going to run out of room, and it happened in a matter of weeks. So the war started February 24th, if I'm not mistaken, and we got our first Ukrainians the first week of March.
Wow.
So we're meeting at the Hotel Kladno, which is right across the street from our office. which is right, like a couple steps away from my apartment. But the Hotel Kladno is this old communist-like building, and half of the rooms aren't even livable because it has never been renovated because they don't get enough people to come, like enough guests to justify renovating it. Well, they had some open rooms, and they opened those rooms to Ukrainians. The head receptionist at the hotel is Ukrainian herself, but she grew up in a Russian-speaking region, so she like kind of more towards the west. In the east, they speak a lot more Russian.
Or east like, of in, where? East of Czech.
In the east of Ukraine, they speak a lot more Russian, and in the west, they speak more Ukrainian.
Okay.
I think that's right. But she grew up in a region where they spoke more Russian, so she doesn't speak Ukrainian.
Okay.
So she was having herself like a hard time communicating with them.
Oh wow. Okay.
But she convinced the people at the hotel, or she asked if we could, and then I think the government was giving a stipend to whoever was housing Ukrainians.
Wow.
So you got a certain amount of money per Ukrainian. I think they might still be doing it, but anyway, so we got in our first Ukrainians. I think that we like the weekend, the first weekend of March, and then that number slowly started to grow. The hotel contacted us because they were able to provide accommodations, but they couldn't provide any food. Mm. And these people were coming with nothing, like literally some of them, like one or two suitcases each. And a lot of them had cars, but had to abandon them at the border.
Wow!
So they really just had nothing.
How did they like literally get there? Like was it by train?
By train, most of them.
Okay.
Train or bus. So they would mostly be dropped off in Prague, where they'd go through. There's this kind of like central processing area, and they would give you Czech health insurance and like some kind of ID.
Really?
And then they would
like a refugee status type of thing. Okay.
And so it's like an emergency visa that's good for a year.
Got it. Okay.
So in the meantime, a lot of them are probably, because it looks like it's going to go on longer than that, they're going to have to also apply for long-term residence, which I feel for them. I've been there. I am there. But So,
get behind me.
I was like, get in line, lady. Well, that was one of the things that actually complicated my visa process is that because so many Ukrainians were flooding the system, like you couldn't get a reservation to turn in your stuff.
Yeah.
So anyway, but longer story shorter, we agreed to provide food for them.
Yeah.
And at that time, everybody was looking for ways to help. So a lot of people from America were contacting us asking, like, how can we help? And we're like, give us money.
Yeah.
There were people, like, people even offered to send stuff. But fortunately, I have enough experience with, like, the postal system to know that that wasn't a good idea.
Yeah.
Like, you would have sent it, like, in February, and we wouldn't have gotten it yet by now.
Oh, really?
My sister sent me Cornerstone's, like, Christmas cards at some time in the beginning of January. I just got them in May, like, at the end of May, too.
Is that normal?
It wasn't always. I think it COVID definitely affected the shipping times, but even now, like with the like fuel situation, like fuel's so expensive, so things have been really taking a long time to come for the last like 2-3 years.
Mm.
So I wouldn't risk it. But anyway,
yeah.
So we started having these lunches as the Ukrainian ladies were coming. They were all moms with kids, and then they would meet other moms with kids as they were out on the playground. And then
the dads need to stay back.
Because the dads had to stay back. They all and like some of the ladies were already divorced, so the dads weren't planning to come anyway. But it's sad for the kids because now like they can't even see their dad on the weekends, and he might get killed in a war.
Right.
So pretty quickly all of the kids were put in school, except for I think for kids that were in high school. They're mostly still doing online school, like with their teachers from Ukraine.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, just because at this point it's kind of not worth. If you're like, you know, a couple of months away from graduation.
But that's wild to me. I feel like when you're in a war, I'm not really thinking about school. I was just like, okay, I'm gonna just try to survive. Maybe like polish my rifle and stuff like that. Not thinking about school. But like, it's like, oh, back to normal, guys. Let's go school. Go Zoom or whatever. Online learning.
Yeah, but I
to
mean,
some degree, I guess.
When you're a teenager, there's not much else you can do.
That's true.
And then once you've gotten out and your life is no longer in danger, what else are you going to do?
Yeah.
Got to go back to, you know, math books or whatever.
I guess, yeah.
And then it's like, you know, you kind of want to do your best to kind of be educated and get work as soon as possible so that you can help your parents.
Makes sense.
So that's why like they're all trying to either finish school or maybe even get into a Czech university if there are courses that they can if you speak English, it's a little easier because then you can go to like English courses that are taught in English. If you don't speak Czech or English, then you're like in a pretty tight spot.
Yikes.
So that's the spot that a lot of kids are in, unfortunately.
Mm.
But yeah. So
do you feel like there's a good amount of Ukrainian speakers
No, that was the other difficulty. There was one Ukrainian speaker in our whole church.
Because like you're saying the reception is Ukrainian, but she speaks Russian.
So yeah, exactly. So the people always ask like, so how are you communicating? And I'm like, Google Translate. I kid you not. I always have my phone out. Yeah. Like I'm wearing overalls right now. Yeah. And I keep it in the front pocket so I can just whip it out.
Yeah.
And it's almost always like the first or second app that's open on my phone.
Interesting.
And then you just hit the, there's, if you don't know, there's a conversation.
Yes. I found out about that because I was talking to a contractor. He was like, do this for me. I was like, oh, this is going to work. This is going to take a little time, but this is going
to
work.
Exactly. It works pretty well. Like from, it works better from Czech to Ukrainian because they're both Slavic languages.
Oh, okay.
But it's done most of what we needed it to do. Every once in a while, we'll get some confusion, but we'll usually clear that up if we kind of break it down into smaller pieces. So that's how we communicate. So in the beginning, they needed help with pretty much everything we were providing, like toiletries, like food. We were providing them with like helping them with medical care and like figuring out what doctor to go to, how to get there, what like, you know, the bus systems and stuff. But now after like, and the first 2 months were tremendously difficult, just daily needs and like constantly phone blowing up with like requests that are in Ukrainian. I got to translate them now. Mm. There's one Ukrainian guy at our church that grew up here. So he was actually super broken up about not being able to go back and serve in the army. Like he really wanted to go back and serve his country.
Why couldn't he go?
He couldn't go back. I think it wasn't because of any legal reasons. If he had wanted to go, he could have.
Yeah.
But he couldn't because his mom is ill.
Oh,
like she's like bedridden and somebody needs to take care of her. So his dad works and he works. So they kind of have to take turns being at home with her. And his sister works too. So he couldn't like in good conscience like abandon his mother to go be in the army. So he stayed here, but then God provided him a role, like a way to help, and that's like helping us with the Ukrainians. So he was coming, and like he couldn't come. He also still had to work. So he, whenever he could, he'd stop by the lunches and like translate for the ladies.
Yeah.
And like he has a car, so he would sometimes drive them around to places that they needed to get. But we were providing lunches and stuff for them every day, and just kind of trying to like help them deal with their issues. And it's like they were very grateful for our help. But they're sinners just like anybody else.
Yeah.
So like oftentimes we would run into like difficulties because like expectations were a little funny or like they wanted something that we weren't providing and like we weren't sure they'd be wise to provide or something like that.
Mm.
So, but after like about the 2 months, like maybe, people were like, oh, thank you so much for sending regular updates. And then I disappeared because we had our church retreat. And so there was a lot of work that we had to do around that. And then after that, we had baptisms. And so a lot of work to do around that too. So hopefully, and then I had to come here. So hopefully when I get back, I can like send some updates and photos. But then the latest is that like almost right after the retreat, like the flood of people coming in for lunches was like drastically slowed down.
Oh.
Or actually right when we were at the retreat, that was when it spiked. We got like double the number of people in like a weekend.
Yeah.
Because there's a group at the old vaccination center. They're staying, the state is letting them stay there because nobody cares about being vaccinated anymore. Everyone who wants to get it has already gotten it.
Yeah.
So they opened up all of those rooms and let Ukrainians stay there. And there are 60 people staying there and like a whole bunch of them started coming to the lunches. And we were like, what do we do?
Yeah.
We can't like accommodate this many people.
Right.
Like, and the lunches were being provided by ladies at our church. They were cooking and bringing
it
for like, you know, 20 to 30 people.
Yeah.
And so it was getting to be a question of how long can we keep this up? And like, should we continue to keep it up? And like, how do we know when to stop?
Because this is like almost like, we don't know when the war is going to end, right?
Exactly. So we're like, I don't think we can keep doing this through the summer. And like, we had to think about English camp coming up and like, who's going to take care of them? And then even like with the church retreat, we ended up buying stuff and having delivered, but we can't do that for like a whole week. It's too expensive. So then, like maybe 2 weeks after that, it started slowly tapering off. Like where we went from like 20 people, like 25 people to lunch to 20 to like 17 to like 12. And then at the weekend there was like, or on the weekends there were like nobody. And then one weekend, there were only two people that came, and that was only because we wrote out that Serhii, the Ukrainian, was going to be there. And I think they felt bad that he had come all the way from Slany. He doesn't live in Kladno.
Oh, wow.
And so they came. But then the following Monday, I actually wasn't there. I had to teach. And so Amy was there, and there were two ladies that showed up, and they were like, do you guys like doing this?
Huh.
And she was like, we're happy to do it. And they were like, because, like, you know, we don't really need it anymore. We're only coming because we feel bad that you guys keep cooking for us. And, like, we don't want the food to go to waste. And so, like, just God brought it naturally to its conclusion.
Yeah.
And it was a huge, like, relief off of all of us.
So, like, I'm curious, like, how they get resolved then. Because, like, I'm thinking there was food needed, providing in that regard. But I guess they were just coming feeling bad. So there's other ways.
I mean,
ways,
it's not like they were coming for weeks because they were feeling bad. It was like at that point, like the people who, like after they started getting jobs, that was when it started resolving itself. Like all the kids were in school.
There was enough jobs for all those refugees that came in?
I think jobs were kind of created for them. Okay. So like, or that they at least felt settled enough to be able to take care of themselves. Hmm. And so they were like, you know, cooking their own lunches. And like they had places now with kitchens where they could like buy their own food and create. And, and we are providing groceries for a number of them. Like, so we buy them groceries weekly, and that's like our current like regular ministry to them. And then just kind of on an as-needed basis, medical stuff, like helping them with medical stuff.
Sure.
And so it's mostly like financial support and then groceries at this point, our current ministry to them.
Mm-hmm.
But Sedhi, the Ukrainian, we have like a Ukrainian section now kind of off to the side, and he translates sermons if they come on Sundays. But that crowd has dwindled significantly since we're no longer providing the lunches, and they no longer feel like beholden to us. So, but they heard it, so God knows, and he can still use that.
For
so.
Sure, absolutely.
But that's the state of things now.
Interesting. Do you feel like some of the Ukrainians have dispersed to different areas?
All of them are still in Klodno.
Okay.
Like, because it's almost impossible to find like a more permanent place to live. There are a couple of people that we know who have apartments, but they all of the ones who have that got it through Ukrainian contacts.
Mm.
Or like they know someone who lived here, and that's why they came to Klodno in the first place.
Yeah.
Or like there was a Ukrainian guy that was letting an apartment, and he's the only person. The reason why a lot of landlords aren't willing to rent to Ukrainians is because they don't know when the war's going to be over.
Right.
If it's going to be over next month, and like you let these people, like you rent, you're going to have to renovate again and do the deep cleaning again, so it's not worth it to them. And you went through all the paperwork or whatever, so they're hesitant to rent to Ukrainians. Or just to people in general who don't have permanent residence,
right,
or at least long-term residence.
Yeah.
So it's hard. And then, like, a lot of them will say, like, out of desperation, no, but I'm planning to stay here. But it's like, that's what you say now.
Yeah.
I wouldn't, like, I'd have hesitations too.
Sure.
But it's a humanitarian crisis. Like, what are you going to do?
That's so interesting. Because, like, if I feel like being in Orange County, growing up in Orange County, if a refugee situation came like that to Orange County, I'm sure you, let me just finish that thought. If a refugee situation came like that to Orange County or Southern California, I feel like, yes, maybe first month, first couple weeks, you feel really bad, want to contribute. It's like, well, this is the second month now. This is a third. Like, I don't know if I can keep this up. You know, I have a life to live, I have family, all these different responsibilities. Like, how did you guys work through that?
Yeah, I think in the first, it was the same, like similar with us. Like, the first couple of weeks, we were just eager to do whatever we could. And we were like constantly on the lookout for more that we could do. I think partially because we were getting all this money in, and we were like, I don't know if we can like spend all of that. I'm pretty sure we've almost worked our way through the first batch, and we're going to have to ask for more. But then as like it, like the longevity of it kind of sank in, we didn't know how long it was going to last.
Right.
A lot of people even thought like it was going to be a couple of weeks,
right,
and then they were going to be driven back or whatever. But now it's clear that it's going to last longer than that. And so once, I think after the like 1.5 month mark, around then, like before the church retreat, that's when we started having discussions about like how to proceed and like how long to provide and like what should be kind of the markers of how to offload, like it's time to offload them or like kind of, you know, set them free, like send them out into the world.
Yeah.
And then like them having a job was definitely one like mark that we were going to be looking for. Them like having figured out like their childcare situation is another thing. And then almost all of them live with other Ukrainians, so they can kind of work together to kind of manage how like childcare.
Mm.
So, but we didn't even really have a chance to like put any of that into action before they kind of figured it out themselves and now don't need our help as much as they did before.
Mm.
So, it's at a sustainable place right now where we can continue. Although, like, I might send out a call for more money soon.
Yeah.
People keep asking me, like, do you guys have enough? And I'm like, I don't know, because I haven't had time to run finances
in
a while.
Right.
So I have to go, after this trip, I got to go home and go through all my receipts.
Not. Yeah, we need
like,
more.
Oh, yeah, I'm actually in the hole. It's like, where did all my savings go?
Yeah.
So I don't think judging by the number that's in my savings accounts, I don't think I've had to dip in yet. So.
Okay.
But we're getting there.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's
are you guys,
where we're
are you
at
guys
now.
As a as a country concerned of like Russia and doing more? And
that's why we're helping so much. The Czech Republic was occupied by the Soviet Union from about 1964 until 1989. And they did not enjoy the Soviet occupation. And so this rings very familiar to them fortunately, there wasn't a ton of, we didn't get bombed at all. Like, one of the things I always say about the Czech Republic is Prague is one of the beautiful cities in Europe. Yeah. Why? Because every time somebody tries to invade us, we just roll over. So there's no need for bombs. So, but we have been occupied, and so we know what it feels like, and we don't like Russia strong-arming anybody. And we see the possibility that if Ukraine falls, Poland could be next, and then that's us. And then that's directly on our borders. We don't want that. So we'll do whatever it takes to prevent that from happening.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But there are different opinions on it.
Sure.
Like, you do hear, I heard from, like, personally from, like, a Czech that I know who's, like, a nice guy, but he was like, oh, I heard that a lot of them are just, like, kind of cheating the system and they're just getting free money.
Who's cheating the system?
The Ukrainians. Yeah. So it's true that they're receiving more money in aid than, like, Czech people that are poor. But it's also true that, like, the Ukrainian people are not in this situation by any of their own actions, whereas a lot of the people that are that need aid from the Czech government, like, there is at least some culpability on their part for not having been responsible with their money. But the other thing is that they have houses that they're already living in, and they have like connections here. These Ukrainians have come with nothing and nobody. So, and also this aid is temporary. We're not planning to provide it forever. Sure. It's supposed to get them on their feet. Do you really expect them to be on their feet after fleeing their homes after 3 months?
Yeah.
That's unreasonable. Mm. But the question now, and the government is already discussing like when to stop the aid, like how long to provide it. But the other question then is like, you know, in the beginning, people were plenty willing to give them jobs and like find things for them to do. They can't keep that up forever. There's like a finite number of jobs that can be given out.
Exactly.
So then there's going to be a huge unemployment crisis.
Yeah.
And then there's going to be accusations of Ukrainians taking our jobs.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's already starting to uglify just a little bit.
Yeah.
And it's probably going to be a lot worse before the end of this. So that's something to kind of bear in mind. And this is like a nice guy. Like I see him and he's like a very kind, sweet fella, but he believes the hype. And that most people just automatically do. You hear it from one person that you kind of like trust and you just take it as truth.
Yeah.
So I told him like, that's not the case with our Ukrainians.
Yeah.
Like how many Ukrainians do you talk to? I talked to like 60 on the regular.
Right.
So yeah, but doing what we can to kind of like fight that too. And like kind of stand up for them because they're not doing, at least there may be people who are like trying to take advantage of the situation, but I don't think that any of our ladies are.
Yeah, interesting. Can you, with that, can you talk a little bit about your ministry in the Czech Republic? Because I know you were talking about you do work in regards to teaching English, but obviously you do a good amount in regards to serving the church as well. Mm-hmm. Share with us a little bit about that.
So like my ministry in the church is like, I'm like kind of the girl Friday. It's like, if you need something done, ask Gina. So like, you know, during COVID, I taught myself how to live stream.
Wow.
We like bought a bunch of like equipment and stuff and just kind of had to teach myself all that stuff on the fly.
Add that to the resume.
Yeah. So just kind of like anytime something needs to be done, anytime like we try to like, are going to start like something new at our church and we need equipment for it, I'm the one who goes and does the research for that.
Do you guys have an Amazon or anything like that?
We have, like, I mean, online shopping is a big thing, and there are plenty of places to go and do it, but nothing quite as good as Amazon.
Okay.
There's so much more available here in the States. Every time I come to the States, I buy up a whole bunch of stuff that I just don't have access to in, either that or it's much cheaper here. Like, electronics are way cheaper here.
Huh, interesting.
So, yeah.
Anyway, but you were saying, like...
But yeah, so, like, that outreaches would be English Club on Thursday nights. And then the Hangout, which is like the English club for teenagers, that's every other Friday. The one thing I'm not really involved in is the youth group, which is the alternate Fridays, which is like my week off. But Josh and Nina Smith are heading that up.
That's cool. And they've been a part of the ministry for how long now?
Josh and Nina arrived in August of last year.
Okay.
And then it looks like they're leaving as soon as Matthew and Natasha get to the Czech Republic, which we don't know when that's going to be yet. But they've submitted their application, but they'll be trading places.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
And then there's a young missionary couple from Tennessee that's with us, Jake and Beverly, or Jake and Whitney Beverly. Everybody calls her Beverly, poor thing, because she's got two first names.
Nice.
And then their daughter, Morgan, she's about to be two. And then for some reason I stopped. I wasn't calling Whitney Beverly anymore, but then I started calling her Morgan. I just can't get her name straight. But anyway, they're here until the end of August, I think, or beginning of September.
Okay.
But they've been helping out with the hangout.
Cool.
But yeah, and then I do like all the like video editing and uploads, like our social media.
Yeah.
Like every third Sunday of the month, we have church lunch every Sunday, and the ladies kind of trade off. We're supposed to like trade off cooking, but like the third Sunday of the month, I cook with Amy. Mm-hmm. So each of us cooks for like 35 to 40 people, because we got like somewhere in the neighborhood of like 70 to 80 people every Sunday now.
Wow. Which is awesome.
Which is huge, yeah. Like COVID was really good for our church, like in terms of numbers.
Uh-huh. And so, it's sustained though.
Stayed like that like since last year. I'd say last year we had like about 70, and then we've added another like 10-ish.
Wow.
So yeah.
That's been really cool. Obviously that's
about like how that happened.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think like during COVID, the people that were like, again, like because our church was kind of had like a more stable foundation, we didn't freak out and panic the way a lot of other churches did that didn't have that foundation, not only in the leadership, but even in the membership.
Huh, interesting.
So like our membership remained pretty steady. And then other people, like under the pressure of COVID, a lot of cracks started to show. And then, like, in the leadership and in the congregation of a lot of churches. So some people, your online church, and it was like, I think for at least 2 months, we had to be on lockdown, and you don't have contact, and nobody called them the entire time from their church.
Yeah.
Like, not a single person contacted them, like, certainly not the pastor, but not even, like, friends. So they're like, who cares about me at this church? Like, do I really want to be here? In the meantime, we're live streaming, and people are finding our sermons on YouTube, and they're listening. And so some of them came to check us out after like quarantine was lifted to see like if we lived up to the hype, and then found that we did.
We
were very nice to them when they arrived. So like, and then there were some churches that went through troubles, and then people decided to like, people kind of saw like, when you have nothing but the preaching to go on, you start to pay more attention to what's being taught. And so some of them were like, why, how have I been at this church for this long? So then like they left and found, and then they came to us. That's actually how Jake and Whitney found us.
Really?
the missionary couple, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because they were at a church. They were sent to a church, like, in Prague, and they just kind of, like, you know, they were sent to serve, and then, like, and, you know, it was kind of easier to overlook some of those things when they were there every Sunday, and they were still picking up check.
Uh-huh.
But then, like, once they were at home, and all they had, the only contact they had was listening to the sermon, and they were like, what is this?
Yeah.
And then they were like, we don't feel comfortable staying here.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
So then they got in contact with another pastor that they know, and asked him, he's, like, in a church that's, like, about an hour and a half north of us. And so they asked him, do you know of any churches in Prague or like in that area that we could maybe go to?
Yeah.
And they only had like a year left on their term.
Yeah.
And then he recommended us. So they came to us. It was like right after the like quarantine lifted was like their first Sunday.
So funny.
And then they ended up joining up with us. So.
No way. That's hilarious.
Even though they're missionaries are like leaving.
I thought they were missionaries sent to. Okay. That's so funny.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's a whole other conversation.
Sure.
But yeah.
So, I mean, how can we be praying for you guys? Praying for you guys, for the Denny's, for the church.
Mm-hmm. For the church. Like, one of our main practical needs right now is we're quickly outgrowing our space. Also, because we're meeting in a hotel, they often have other activities, for example, or like other events going on. For example, there's something happening on Tuesday. So that means that after church on Sunday, and we're having a baptism, and we've got like an inflatable pool that's going to be filled up with water right after the baptism, we're going to have to drain that pool somehow and take everything all of our stuff out of that hall and put it in a storage area in the back so that they can have their event on Tuesday. And then Saturday, all of the like the young men of the Young Men's Bible Study have to come in and set everything back up again, which is like, it doesn't happen that often, but when it happens, it's super annoying.
Sure.
So we're looking for a place.
Yeah.
And the church in Michigan has, where Josh and Nina Smith are from, have donated a significant amount to us to be able to buy our own place.
Wow, that's awesome.
But the question is, like, number one, we have to have time to look for one.
Yeah.
And the church, like our elders are slammed right now. This is a relatively new development, but we had three elders, Daniel Adamowski, Marcus Denny, and Aleš Novotný. And the weekend before our church retreat, Aleš Novotný stepped down as an elder.
Oh, okay.
The reasons cited were that he felt that, like, aspiration is part of the calling, and he felt that he did not aspire to the degree that he needed to in order to fulfill the duties of an elder. Mm. So he stepped down, but did it in an exemplary way, where where he was continuing to serve in the same ways that he'd been serving for the most part.
Yeah.
The only real difference is that he's no longer involved in the decision-making process for like decisions that affect the whole church.
Yeah.
But still serving, still present.
That's cool.
But that's one less elder that we have, and one less. I mean, I'm sure that they could, but he's like a full-time worker. He works for the post, like as an accountant for the check post. And he, who's got the time to look for a place in Klodno? Nobody at the moment.
Right.
And then Marcus is like up to his neck in counseling issues and like, you know, having to prepare sermon. He preaches like pretty much every week. They're preparing to come back to the States for furlough for 6 weeks, like right after our English camp. Nobody's got the time right now.
Right.
And then just from what I've seen of places, I kind of cursory will look around every once in a while. If I see like a, you know, for rent type of sign, I'll go and look. But there aren't any, so far I haven't seen any places that are in existence that would be like right for our needs, have a big enough space for all of us to have Sunday service, but also some side rooms for like a nursery or for Bible studies, office for Marcus, these kinds of things, and like a, ideally like a kitchen for the cooking. So I'm thinking we might need to build, but how to find the land, like how to, like, you know, and then we don't want it to be too far outside of Klodno where people are like, I'm not going to go that far. So, you know, pray for wisdom in the process, for like adequate funds, for God to provide an opportunity for whatever, like just to lead us to a place.
Yeah.
It'd be nice if it just fell in our laps.
Never know.
Yeah,
never know.
Never know. Pray, pray, pray.
Yeah, for sure, for sure.
For like for the missionaries and like people who are serving there. I think number one for the elders, that's a lot that goes just on Daniel and Marcus. And our church, as we're growing, it's been encouraging, and people that have come, like, it's been a huge encouragement, like, their excitement, but they also come, like, with all their issues.
Yeah.
And some of these issues are quite complicated. We have, like, women who are divorced that have unbelieving ex-husbands. We have, like, women who are still married and, like, have, like, marital issues that just haven't been dealt with in years.
True.
Unbelieving children, like, all kinds of crazy stuff that's going on. And like, you know, just years and years of bad, and a lot of new believers with like years and years and years of really bad habits in their lives. So yeah, lots of needs. And then, so just wisdom for them and unity for them. Like unity, I think, is what preserved us in the time of COVID. And we need it more than ever now.
Yeah.
And then for like those of us who are serving, just like even for God to provide more people, like our church is like, I'm thankful that everybody's willing to serve, like they want to serve, but I think some of them haven't quite learned what it means to serve sacrificially yet.
Yeah.
They're happy to do it when they're available, but they're not necessarily willing to make themselves available, if that's true, if you get that. But and it's also like there are people who are super available and like really willing, but not very capable. And then there are people who are super capable, but they're not available and not really necessarily willing to sacrificially make that time.
Yep.
So it's been hard to find like consistent help.
Yeah.
Because like, it's easy. It's super fun in the beginning when you're like, oh, wow, I'm serving. It's exciting. But then when you have to get up like every week earlier and like show up, that's a little different. So we're growing. Our congregation's growing in faith as well as in size. So like just for God to grow people like quickly.
Yeah.
In capability and in availability. But even like for servants from abroad to be sent, like the right people to fulfill the needs that we have. But yeah, but I think the heart of all of us is for like BSKK to become self-sustaining.
Yeah.
Where like it's the members that are like keeping it afloat and not like always having to draw resources from outside. But we're a long ways away at this point.
Yeah, you say so.
So yeah.
Yeah.
And then like just for like the Denny's are coming back like I mentioned on furlough, for that to be like a refreshing time. And just for God to provide rest for them.
Right. What I'm curious always, when they're on furlough here in the States, like how's that going with the church?
Yeah, that's a good question. In the they usually line up a bunch of guest speakers. Danielle will probably preach at least once. It's 6 weeks.
Yeah.
And then I think Peter Smith is coming, so he'll preach at least 1 week, maybe two. Alex Rappe, a brother from the Spokane Church, is going to be staying after. He's coming for English camp, but he's staying a weekend, an extra weekend, so that he can preach for Marcus like the first weekend that he's going to be gone.
Wow.
So we don't need to grab that many. Like when he had to go back for 6 months in 2018,
yes,
and that was a real bear trying to find people to fill in those guest speaker spots.
Yeah.
But so we get guest speakers in. The bigger question is kind of like, who's going to handle all the counseling stuff?
Yeah.
Or is that all just going to be put on hold for 6 weeks while he's gone? So we'll see what happens and like how dire the needs are.
Yeah.
And I think, I don't know if he's going to have to Skype with these people. It's hard.
Yeah.
Like it sounds like, oh, well, you know, we'll be on furlough. We'll have time. No.
Right.
You got people to see. You got places to be.
Right.
And even when you're at home, it's like you're there to be with your family and you can't just be like in the room on a Skype while they're watching you. You know, that's weird.
Right.
So, yeah. So, but... And it'll be me, Josh and Nina, and Jake and Whitney holding down the fort.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And, like, I'm not teaching during the summer, and Josh isn't either, so we'll be much more available than usual. So, hopefully, we can fill, like, the gaps to the... At least to keep the dam from completely being destroyed.
Yeah. A lot of prayer needed in regards to that.
Yeah. But, so, pray for our summer as well. Yeah.
Well, Gina, thanks so much for doing this time. Just wanted to pick your brain, do a little Q&A, catch
super
up.
Super fun.
So thankful that you're here.
Good times. Now that I know there's like a podcast, I'm definitely going to subscribe.
So thanks, Gina. We'll be praying for you.
Thanks.
Look, and then you have your updates. You have your updates on Facebook.
Oh, yeah.
Talk
so
about
that. This time where I plug all my stuff.
Yes. Totally.
BSKK News. If you've got Facebook, you can friend me, send me a message, and I'll add you to the group. It's a private group because sometimes I share things that, like, I don't want an unbeliever who thinks they're a believer to come and find my podcast and be like, she thinks I'm an unbeliever. That would be very, it's true. And I'm willing to tell them that to their face, but I want them to hear it in a conversation and not from a podcast.
Yeah.
And then they're going to be like, and you're telling like millions of people back in America about me. And I'm like, more like 10. So, but if you want weekly updates, that's the way to do it.
Yeah.
But we would appreciate, and like, if you like dogs, trust me, you got to subscribe.
Just subscribe for that.
So yeah, and then I also have a newsletter that I update very infrequently.
Yeah, it's all good.
But
it's
I'm trying
good.
To get better about it.
You are you're doing what you can with all the things that you have on your plate. So we appreciate you, Gina. Thanks.
Thank you.